Unfiltered, the official Sunderland AFC podcast.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the SAFC Unfiltered podcast. Myself and Danny are back once again. It's been a little while. There's been so many games, so many cup games. There's been international breaks and everything like that, Danny, but we're back on the pod.
Yeah, we are. And as you say, it has been a while since we've been on the pod, isn't it? And I think, as you mentioned, the games have been coming thick and fast, Saturday, Tuesday. But lads have got a little break this week, so it's good for us to finally get back onto the pod.
Yep, and we're getting back into it by speaking to the first team coach, Lee Johnson. And Sunderland find themselves in decent form at the moment, pushing towards the top end of the table in EFL League One once again and coming through a great test at the weekend against Plymouth.
Yes, they did. We've obviously had that dip, haven't we, a few weeks back. But credit to the boys, they've responded, got back on track. And as you say, yeah, in the last six unbeaten, 4 wins, 2 draws, so... No credit to them, the amount of injuries we've picked up as well. A lot of lads in the treatment room, but they've dug in and they've got themselves going again. So coming up to halfway point in the season, a lot to play for.
Yeah, it was the manner of the win over the weekend. We got off to a blistering start, showing some really good offensive play. And then the second half, really solid as well, weren't we, in defensive play?
Yeah, I think for me, it was probably the most impressive 45 minutes at the weekend, first half. I think everything about us defensively limited them to very little. Stop them playing their game the way they like to try and knock the ball about. We're pressing high, kept nicking it off them and scored a couple of quality goals. I think the only downside from the first half is we didn't go in 3 or 4 up. The amount of chances we did create. Second half, they came back into it, but we still had chances on the counter-attack. And no, it was a good, solid win. Back-to-back wins at home. A little break, as we mentioned there, midweek. Chance for the boys to regroup and refresh and get ready to go again at the weekend at Ipswich.
And just to set the scene for everyone listening to this around the world on SFC Unfiltered, myself and Danny are in a broom cupboard at Black Cat House. We are banished once again from the Academy of Light, and that's because COVID's reared its ugly head again.
Yeah, it's spiked up again, hasn't it? So, protocol comes into play. And, yeah, as you mentioned, it would have been nice to get down to the training ground to have a chat to the gaffer face-to-face, but next best thing, we're back on Zoom, as you mentioned, in the broom cupboard.
We are indeed. Okay, then. We're going to be joined on the line in a second by Lee Johnson. Welcome back to SAFC Unfiltered, first team coach Lee Johnson. How are you doing, Lee?
Very good. Lovely to see everybody and hear everybody. So happy Christmas.
Yeah.
Have a good one.
Yeah. This is a good opportunity to get you on because we've had that. We're currently in a good run of form in the league at the moment. We came through a bit of a blip in the league, but was it ever in doubt that the form would return, Lee?
He didn't invite me on in the bad run. So, no, look, I think it's a big club, and I think, the swell, if you like, of sort of emotion, outside noise, whatever you want to call it. That sounds a bit disrespectful, outside noise. It's just passion that we have to cope with, We'll have to cope with this, whatever division we're in. And I think generally most clubs in the world, and certainly this country, have to deal with the same scenarios now. So I like to think that, like, many, many people absolutely believe in what we're trying to do, This is effectively year one of a completely new plan. And there's been a lot of sort of frustration, heartache, confusion over the previous years. But I think now, we're on the right path, we just need to have a clean run at it. And obviously the more support you've got in and around the team, the manager, the football club, the support base, absolutely easier it is to do.
Yeah, and we're going to, keep things on a positive theme here, because I think we came through a great fixture at the weekend and many fans share that opinion as well. It was a real test. Would it be fair to say it was one of your biggest wins as a Sunderland manager, beating Plymouth at home? All things considered.
No, I don't think it would. That's just me being honest. I think that it was a really good win. I think it was a really entertaining game. I thought Plymouth were, having watched them, obviously, in the lead up to the game, doing your due diligence. I knew that they would cause us problems in certain areas, because all teams do. But I also knew that at the moment, our strike force, you know, with how potent they are, how athletic they're looking, how confident they are in their general being, would cause them problems. And that was the way it proved. And it was lovely to see. And what was nice for me was solely we bridged the gap by a point to the top of the league. Obviously, top of the league was still 2 points and was 2 points before the game. But every time we win, we step closer to where we want to be. And I think that I was listening to Alex Ferguson the other day. I was watching that documentary on Netflix. And I found it really interesting, something that he said. And I thought it was really relative to us, where he said that basically, like, losing is part of the progress. And that sounds like a crazy statement, almost sort of contradicting himself. But this early in the season, with as many young players as we had, you know, we've had to go through a spell of losing a couple of games, two or three games in the league, because that will stand you in good stead. What we've seen is we've seen young players now drag us through a difficult spell and cope with all the noise or the external pressures. And now they've stepped up and stepped through it. We can only be stronger. And, you know, some of the performers, some of our absolute main performers that we've had to rely on have been under 20 this year. And that's just fascinating, really, to see, because often you'll hear, well, I don't know, it goes back to the old adage, you can't win anything with kids. And actually, you can build around your top kids. And I think that's what we're doing.
Yeah, Lee, I was going to touch on that as well. You know, just going back as well to the blip a few weeks back now. You've mentioned it there, some of these young lads coming in, Sirkin, Huggins, you know, Doyle, Broadhead, all these young lads who are trying to find their feet in the game, really, aren't they, in terms of their experience, the amount of games they've played at this level even. How have they responded to that 3 or 4 game period we had? Was it up to some of the senior lads to try and help them pull them through, your Bailey Wrights, you know, Flanagan's, these type of boys to help them through as well? Or were they okay, level-headed and just grinding it out and getting back to it on the training ground?
I think a little bit of everything. I think that, Danny, you know yourself, like, do you know what I mean? When did you feel that you'd actually made it or arrived? Was it 100 league games, 150 league games? You know, how many experiences did you have to go through before you realised you could cope? Mm. And I think that's what we're and they are experiencing. And naturally, you support, you know, you support as much as possible. That'll be family members supporting the boys. That'll be senior teammates supporting the boys, obviously the coaching staff supporting the lads as well. And I think the key is to always believe in the talent that you've got, you know what I mean, and make sure that nothing gets you down with bringing out your best in any particular moment. And inevitably the challenge is always, can you bring the best of your game when it matters most? And that is at the moment, of course, the next game, and generally Saturday 3 o'clock. And they've done that. And the Oxford game, I thought, was a good example of coming through that. You know, first half was a bit tricky, a bit out of sorts. Second half, do you know what I mean, took the shackles off.
Yeah,
really, really went for it, and should have been sort of home and away, if you like, in terms of the goals that we should have scored.
Would you put that second half down for me? I think that's been like the springboard in a way, really, for the last couple of games. That second half performance against Oxford, although we didn't win the game, and it did feel like we almost dropped 2 points, didn't it, coming off? Feeling deflated, we had a lot of ball, you know, press them high up, getting in and around their box time and time again, but come away with a point. And then obviously we go on to the Morecambe game where, you know, start to finish, we took care of them. And then Saturday, I know you said there, no, it perhaps wasn't your favourite performance so far, but for me, I thought the first 45 minutes ticked a lot of boxes defensively, limited them to very little. At the same time, we were high energy, we were pressing, and the only disappointment in that first half is perhaps we didn't come in 3 or 4 goals to the good.
Yeah, I think we were quite bullish sort of after the Oxford game, you know, like certainly in the post-match analysis, the lads themselves coming in after the game, and I think one of the shouts from Tom Flanagan, which is good, was that's the standard, boys, like second half, that is the standard. We play up to that standard every week. We're going to be very successful. And that's what you like, you know, when the players are using that sort of terminology and speaking like that, and it's not coming from the staff, it means they truly believe it, and obviously they felt it. then in the post-match, I remember actually saying, look, lads, like we're playing to a point now where somebody's going to get spanked five. And you get that feeling. I think you get the feeling when the team needs a boost, you know, needs a shot of confidence, and you get a feeling when they're focused, and then you get a feeling when they need a shot of anxiety. And certainly, like over this last week, you really sort of, you could smell the focus, if you know what I mean, the intensity of concentration, which is effectively what it takes to bring out your best. And I think we've done that, like you say, on the last 2.5 games, which has been nice to see.
Is it a good thing we've got a break today, midweek this week? You know, we've had a lot of Saturday, Tuesdays, and you mentioned it yourself, the pitch is starting to get a little bit heavy, churning up a bit, isn't it? And the pitch gets a breather now for a couple of weeks. Do you think it's a good thing to almost charge the batteries? You know, one or two injuries, Lyndon Gooch has gone off as well at the weekend, so a time to regroup a little bit this week?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Danny. Again, like drawing back from your own experience, you know, there's a lot of elements of fatigue that can set in. Sometimes it's physical fatigue, sometimes it's tactical fatigue, sometimes it's travelling fatigue. And when we had our bad spell, it was amazing how many little wins opponents were getting on us, like 2 or 3 days extra recovery and or long travelling journeys for us, you know. And then you flip it and you think, well, Plymouth have had to go to MK Dons, then travel back to Plymouth. Then
yeah, it was the day after us as well, wasn't it, last week? They played on the Wednesday, didn't they, as well?
They played on the Wednesday. So all these little factors come into it. Ipswich now have got a game on Wednesday against Barrow. Then they got to travel back. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
it does.
Like, there's all these little, like, small little wins that when the margins are so fine, physically become really important. And we are a team that need to be at our best physically and at our brightest, because we're not a toe-to-toe dominant side in terms of that physicality. We've got to be nimble. We've got to be sharp. We've got to be on the front foot. And so actually, a lot of the work that we've been doing behind the scenes, a lot of our focus has been on recovery, sleep. We've had a guy from wellness come in and talk about various things for players, like the circadian rhythms that involve sleep, looking at whether or not we should buy floodlights at the football club to when we should train, you know. So all these like minute sort of 1%, if you like, that hopefully will give us a better opportunity. Pillows, getting them for the boys so they can travel. And when we sleep, then the neck's not a bit stiff. Do you know what I mean? We've had a few of them going into season. So it's like so many tiny details that we're just trying to nail as best as possible and be world-class at the basics.
As well as that, you know, the performance for me at the weekend as well, the last three games you've named an unchanged 11. You know, whether that's been forced as well because of the amount of injuries we've had and obviously the form of the boys, they've ground out and got the results as well, which has helped you. Again, at the week, Lyndon Gooch going in at left back, you know, Winchester again, centre midfield, and then going out to right back. You've had Broadhead coming back into it, who's on fire. He's scoring, he looks lively. Pritchard's finding his form. So a lot of positives as well in terms of that, as well as the negatives of losing so many to the treatment room, I guess.
Absolutely. And I think after the Sheffield Wednesday game, like, it was clear that in that little spell, like, our best players, if you like, weren't at top levels. You know what I mean? And I think the laser-like focus really has been making sure that we do everything to invest in those players that are fit, that are available holistically, you know, all around the board, really, emotionally, physically, tactically, technically. And that has actually worked in our favour, I think, just having that laser focus and knowing who's fit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Making sure that all energy from the staff go on to those players and getting them right. And there's been a lot of healing. But at the same time, like, the confidence quickly restored, because I think they've got clarity in the way we want to play. When we're not playing well, we know why, which is important. Yeah. And therefore, we can turn it around pretty quick with a bit of a rest and a couple of good weeks coaching.
Yeah, I thought as well, obviously, when we're doing the commentary, and I said after one of the games that we almost went from playing good then first 10, 12 games where everyone's at it, and then maybe in our dip, you can get away with maybe one or two coming off it, can't you? And you can carry one or two maybe, but for me, it seemed like a lot of the lads just dipped at the same time. And then that's the confidence, isn't it? The results brings that, and then it just takes one getting over the line. And I think the Ipswich one, yes, we weren't perhaps great on the day, but it was just a case of getting that win and just getting a little bit of confidence back into the boys. And I think you can see from there, we are getting the wheels back on track, aren't we?
Definitely. I think that Ipswich game is important. You're right in terms of our fleet, our free flowing football, certainly against Ipswich. But to be honest, the concentration and the focus throughout the week had been maintaining our distances, you know, from top to bottom, making sure we was compact, making sure we were difficult to beat. Fans hadn't really seen that at home. Do you know what I mean? Because we'd sort of attacked everybody. Ipswich played around us a lot. You know, they had a lot of possession. Yeah. But we were also quite dynamic and potent in our counter-attacks, and quite an interesting game. And obviously we play Ipswich again soon, and contrast of form now, you know, between the last Ipswich game and their form and our form.
Yes.
Those confidence levels, and that'll be interesting to see how that affects the game and the performance. But like, sometimes you have to theme the week based on what you believe had gone poorly. So we felt like our willingness to press and maybe press a little bit greenly and a little bit early, a little bit naive, stretched our distances from top to bottom, and therefore gave opponents too much space. And the fact that we played two or three good teams in that spell, slightly fatigued, only exposed that even more. So that was our focus on the Ipswich game. And then obviously we tried to build from there.
I suppose as well, there's only a certain amount you could do. I've heard fans say, oh, why don't we go and press from the start, do it for 90 minutes. I said it, didn't I, Saturday, that you can only do it for a certain amount of time. You've got to save some in the legs for when you do regain possession. And, you know, you can't just go gung-ho getting after them. Yes, sometimes they might pop it through you. But we've seen it in the last couple of games where we've got after us, the front four have managed to nick it. We are getting opportunities on that counter attack. And when you've got Ross Stewart, you've got Nathan Broadhead, Pritchard up to speed now, you're going to be a threat. Diaku as well coming into it at the weekend, who had a good game as well.
Exactly. And sometimes that is our challenge, actually, is to have less possession because we want to exploit those spaces. You know, you've got the speed of Ross Stewart, you've got the speed of Broadhead. Xhaka is a good example, quick in behind. And sometimes, depending on what 11 you select, or slightly alter at what point you press. We've got 21 pressing triggers that we work off. And there's probably seven that are sort of the fundamentals that are embedded into every session. But if we nail those seven and do that extremely well in the game, we often win the game.
Yep.
It's as simple as that. So there's a lot of detail that goes into it. And what looks cohesive in any actual moment needs a lot of work. Do you know what I mean? Especially when you've got new players coming into the group.
One last one I'm going to ask you on before Frankie comes in here. The corner at the weekend looked like it had come straight off the training ground. Obviously, balls into Doyle. I'm thinking Doyle on his left foot can flip it round the corner into Dan Neil, who's found himself free, slots it home. But having heard Dan Neil speak after the game, he said unintentionally found him in the middle of the box. What's your take on that one?
Well, I think he's killed Macca, that's for sure, because Macca was going to live off that for a couple of weeks. The reality was the pass was meant for Broadhead.
Right.
But at the same time, numerical advantage on the edge of the box meant that one player couldn't pick up two. So obviously that player chose to go and mark Broadhead and then let it on the inside of him, which allowed Dan Neil to be free. So, part one and two, absolutely perfect. Part three, element of luck or fortune to it, but at the same time, partly down to the numerical advantage created.
Oh, sorry, Macca.
Lee, we're up to third in EFL League One now. Just give the listeners a bit of an insight into a manager's mind, if you like. And how often do you look at the league table, or do you not bother it until a certain point?
No, I think it's important to understand everything, really. You know, that the league table brings the mood, the vibe, the players' confidence levels, the motivational challenge. You know, some, like this week, we've been able to use that opportunity. Look, if we win today, we can go joint top. We must keep pressure on that. So it's always looking forward. What you don't want to do is start really looking behind you. You know, the communication needs to be world class in almost everything that you say and that you do, because you're always trying to put the players in the best possible mindset to play with freedom, to play on the front foot, to not tighten up and be tense, you know, and there's a lot that goes into that. And I suppose the best managers in the world are the ones that are just amazing at those type man management skills, really.
Lee, do you sometimes put the look at the fixtures and put them into little groups? I've worked with managers before where you'll be in the meeting rooms and they'll say, almost how many points are we expecting to get from this group of five games, breaking it down throughout the season? Is that something you do with the players as well and look at those in detail and maybe on paper, you always say, don't we, on paper this looks a good fixture. I'm not one like that myself, really. I take each game as it comes, but do you sometimes do that and break the games down into little groups?
Done that in the past, done it at Bristol a yep. fair amount. I think the way that the championship season presents itself, it was almost a series of sprints, whereas I feel like League One's like a marathon.
Grind.
I mean, yeah, I think if you get into the stage of the season where, like, you know you need a certain amount of wins to get promoted, I think at that point you can really start to use like a motivational sort of ladder, if you know what I mean, yep. to go and give extra to the players or have theme nights or make it more fun, you know, just to give them that focus on winning. Teams that I've got promoted in the past have tend to use that tact and it's always gone really, really well. I remember at Bristol City as a player getting promoted and we needed 10 wins, and after every win the chairman came down and the lads had him in a headlock singing Marbella on the chairman. Do you know what I mean? So yeah. Kirill, be aware, because I think the lads would love Vegas if that was.
yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, we had it on at West Ham, actually. Yeah, we had it at West Ham on the Sam at the back of the room. There was a big board and it was like a chart going up, and at the end of it there was a picture of Las Vegas at the end of it, and it was obviously getting those wins. So it's a carrot for the lads, isn't it?
It is, and it's amazing the effect, again, having experienced it, both of us, the effect that can have.
Yeah.
And with every win, it then almost strengthens the bond because you've got something to look forward to.
And that bond sounds like it's really in good spirits at the moment. And to protect that even further, the club have put their own protocols in where we're in essentially a broom cupboard at Black Hat House at the moment. The Academy of Light has locked down, but we've seen some big fixtures this week in the Premier League and in European football as well have suffered because of a COVID outbreak. Just how seriously are the club taking it up there?
Oh, really seriously. Yeah, we had a meeting about it today. Obviously, it's such a fluid situation. It just seems to be changing all the time. Of course, we've got to protect our families and ourselves' health, but we've also got to protect the points. Do you know what I mean? There are certain protocols that you've got to adhere to, aka you being in a broom cupboard, to make sure that, you know what I mean, you're not effectively bringing this onto the doorstep. So, yeah, it hasn't been a great moment in time for football. There's no doubt on that. The fact that we didn't have the fans for a bit. Even now, the fact that the fans have potentially got to have a COVID passport, which just doesn't seem right. But at the same time, it's really important that we give everybody the opportunity to come to a fixture and actually go home safe and feel like they're safe, if you like, from not getting what clearly is a highly infectious variant.
Yeah, we're going to move the conversation on a little bit now, Lee, if that's okay. We're out the Papa John's, out the FA Cup, but there's a huge, great big game coming up against Arsenal very soon. Lots of fans very excited about it. And I imagine the players and the staff are excited about it as well. Just how are you going to go into that game?
I think we'll go into it full of beans. You know, I think it's a really good game. The lads, you can get that feeling that they're talking about it. You know, players that come back from injury seem to have that one as their target, and maybe accelerated by 5 or 6 days because the Arsenal game's on the horizon. Obviously, Sunderland in recent years have experienced big games like that, having been in the Premier League, but these players haven't necessarily. So in terms of the squad, I think the team spirit's always been excellent. Last year it was good, this year it was good. You get individuals that maybe don't quite get on as well as they would with somebody else, but that's in every walk of life. Whereas at the moment, I think the collective unity is really strong. And I think games like the Arsenal game only breed that because it's something to look forward to. You know, it's something out of the ordinary. It's a Sky game. I think the tickets are relatively cheap, so it'll be a really packed out game, and we'll go thinking that we can go and produce our style of football at that level, and I'll be disappointed if we don't.
And you know, we touched upon it, the fans are going to be there, you know, singing you on the pitch, and they've been there consistently all season as well. Just how much of a difference does the Red and White Army make to the lads on the pitch and yourself?
Yeah, in every way. I think it's first and foremost, I think as a young player, you always dream of that. You know, when you're scoring a goal in the park and you're making that noise of the crowd, you know, and you're putting yourself in the position of being one of your idols, it's the crowd interaction that gives you that buzz. And when you score your first league goal, or, you know what I mean, you win your first game on your debut, whatever that may be, it's all based around the crowd. It's not the same without the crowd. No, so the fact that, you know, we have such great numbers when we travel, the fact that, I mean, you watch me, I sing that Wise Men Say loud. It's probably pretty embarrassing if you had me and on camera at the start. But I like a bit of karaoke, and I've definitely killed a few classics in my time.
That's good enough for the next podcast. Thanks, Luke.
But B, it makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck. Do you know what I mean? So like if that's happening to me on the side, what's happening to the players? Like that should give them that extra sort of 5-10% adrenaline that, if channeled right, can be used really positively. And I think generally it has, because our home form has been pretty good, particularly in front of the big crowd. So like, we are under no illusions the positive effect that our supporters have in every way, whether that be the travelling. Listen, there's Sunderland fans everywhere. I must bump into... You wouldn't believe some of the crazy places I bump into Sunderland fans, but they're literally everywhere, and it's nice to see.
No, I agree. I agree with you, and you say the difference it's made for us, even up on the gantry. It was quiet last year. It was eerie in the stadium, wasn't it? And even, you know, 28 to 30, just over 30,000 week in, week out at the stadium alight as well in those numbers. You could hear it Saturday. I think they appreciated the performance, didn't they? And even with the headphones on up in the top, you can hear it through there. So, as you say, down on that touchline there, the hairs are up on your neck. I used to get it coming out of that tunnel, Dance of the Nights, when that comes on, coming out of the tunnel there, and it's a great experience. And when we spoke, I think we spoke to Dan Neal on the pod, didn't we? And I just asked him about some of the younger lads as well. And he said he looked at Callum Doyle when they come out the tunnel, and the roar went up from the fans, and he sort of gave him a little look, and he just sort of smiled and was taking it all in, really. So great experience for some of these younger boys as well, and it playing their trade, and as I said earlier, finding their feet in the game, going out to 30-odd thousand every week.
Amazing experience. I think Callum's a great example, because Callum's clearly one of the best clubs in the world, you know. So he's getting Premier League experience. He really is. He's getting it on the fan base, you know. Yep. He's getting on the match day experience. He's getting the training ground facility. But obviously he's playing at a level where he's coping and performing extremely well at such a young age. So, to be honest... What these players have got to appreciate is, like, this could be the best standard you ever play at. Like, that's why I love Winnie so much, because I think Winnie truly understands and appreciates Sunderland.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And what, like, the fact that he's been at, like, Oldham and Forest Green and Cheltenham, to be at this size of club, do you know what I mean? He's getting that experience that he thought he'd never have. And you see that, I think, in the way he plays and the way he trains. And he's using the facility to improve himself on a daily basis, both in terms of the gym, the recovery, and his athletic performance has come on in leaps and bounds as well, which is what we thought, obviously, when we signed him. And I think there's two really good different examples there in terms of age range of how they're maximising the environment, both on a match day and the training ground.
Yeah, I actually said that, didn't I, to you this season? It was one of the earlier games, I can't remember at home, but he was flying up and down that right-hand side at right back, and I said, I don't know what Carl Winchester's been up to in the summer, but he's come back in and he looks sharp. And from the first minute, and I think even to the last minute of the weekend as well, he was at it. And wherever at this moment in time you're asking him to play, I think he's enjoying being back in the middle of the park. He's doing that dirty side. He can pick a pass as well. And then you're switching back out to right back, and the next minute he's flying up and he's on the edge of the box supporting players, isn't he?
And you can really tell he appreciates playing for the club as well. I think in recent game he was subbed off and he got like a standing ovation for his performance. I think he turned around to check that they were clapping him at one point. I don't think he believed
something
it
had gone on.
But it's really nice to see from a fan's perspective that, isn't it? You know, yeah. A player's clearly loving their football and really, you know, trying as hard as they can.
Definitely. And I think that this, like, from what I hear, this club in the past has not always had that. And it is important, you know, that like, it doesn't matter where a player comes from, whether they're exotic in their name or whether they're from Forest Green. Do you know what I mean? As simple as that. And they're stepping up. It's about like putting in your maximum. Like, what does your maximum look like? And I think fans all over the world will appreciate any player that puts in their maximum. And I think, like I say, Winnie's a good example of that, although we do sprinkle Nandrolone on his cornflakes every day.
Yeah, I mean, it was only a couple of seasons ago when players just didn't return from pre-season training. So the fans are well aware of what it means to see a committed player at the club. And the fans have been getting in touch with us as well, Danny, haven't they? And they've asked
questions off the Twitter, if we can fire these at you, Lee, if that's okay. The first one we've got here is from at Jonathan Place One, and he asks, how busy do you expect January to be in terms of incomings and outgoings? And will injuries play a part in this?
I think the first port of call is we have to come out of January better than we went in. It's as simple as that. Like, you know, if we don't progress, other clubs will. And we want to give ourselves the best possible chance. So everything that we're doing, obviously, behind the scenes, within the guidelines and the model and the will of the ownership, means that we'll do everything we can to come out better.
Is this something that goes on as well? I think when we spoke to Christian last time, he came on the pod and I asked him, didn't
I? It
was
at the end of the last transfer window. Yeah. He said he's already started.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not just closes and then doesn't have a month or two to just relax and forget about transfers. Is it something that's constantly ongoing? You're speaking to him regularly and the directors and asking, and then at the same time, you've got 8 or 9 bodies in the treatment room. So, you know, you're probably speaking to the physios. How soon are these lads likely to be back out there? You know, Dennis Sirkin, Denver Hume, you need a left back out there as soon as possible with Lyndon Gooch. So I bet there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes there, isn't it? Which stresses you out a bit, I suppose.
it's part of the job. I think that, you know, this, when you've got to be the calm in the storm sometimes, you know, and you've got to trust people as well, as we have this year. You know, you've got to trust your work. You've got to, like, I go back to the first game of the season, like where we had Winchester and Dan Neal
fullback,
playing fullbacks. It doesn't look so crazy now, does it? Because both of those players have had fantastic seasons. But at that point, you know, to the naked eye and to the fans probably thinking, what is going on at this football club?
So
we have to make the right decision. Sometimes we have to make, like, unfashionable decisions. You know, everyone would want us to spend like a huge amount of money on maybe somebody that is a big name or that's been and done it before. But I think January, the key is to sign players that are fit. You know, you don't want to be getting them fit in January. They've got to be keen to want to be a part of the project, both for the short and the long term. They've got to be better than what you've got. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Because that's important as well. You don't just want to add numbers. And they've got to be able to fill the hole, if you like, that's in that squad at the moment in time, whether that be an injury or just the fact that somebody's out of form or not good enough, simple as that. But it's an ever-evolving process. It's consistent. It does change, you know, certain things change. You might have a good cut run, which brings more money in. You might sell a player. You might have to pull back in certain areas, whatever. You might have to fill a void. So it's very fluid. It's ever evolving. But we're just trying to be as consistent as possible in, like I say, the ownership's like plans and the way they want to move forward.
Well, one thing is, I don't think the fans want to see Dan Neal back at left back and Winchester at right back, because they're the engine room at this moment in time, aren't they? So
exactly. Yeah. And that's what happened to us last season, wasn't it? I think that was a
centre half as well, didn't we, last year as well?
Yeah. You're taking good players out the middle and putting them in various parts of the pitch, and you actually lose a little bit of both. So it was definitely something that was considered. But yeah, hopefully we've got 2 left backs coming back very, very soon. So that should be positive.
Good. Okay. Next question is from Hazza M 2002, and he asks, what is the biggest difference at the club between now and when you first joined?
I think the culture's improving, definitely. I think, obviously, with every player that you sign, with every player that goes out, you start to move towards the playing philosophy even more. You know, I think that's something as well. The team becomes a little bit more cohesive, a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more fluid in the way that you, in your mind's eye as a manager, want the team to play. I think that there's really good people coming into the organisation. So you'll see in coming weeks, there'll be more additions, if you like, to the backroom team. I think that's important, more professional, more organised, more talent. Should be like really raising the standards daily.
Yeah.
I think that having the fans back in clearly has been probably the biggest sort of increase in sheer value. Do you know what I mean? If you're looking at like pure value,
yeah,
having the fans in the stadium has presented us with that value, and trying to maintain that sort of vibe, that consistency, is probably the hardest thing to do at a club like this, but also probably the most powerful when you get it right. And whether that's my interviews, whether that's the team performances, whether that's just letting people see the lads' personality a little bit more. You know, it's really important that we get that unity, fan base, board, players and staff as best possible. And that is really, really improving, I think, by the day, effectively.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, good stuff. Yep. Okay, the next question is from SAFC _ Calamar. And he asks, what's been your favourite game as a manager of Sunderland Football Club so far?
That's a good one. That's a good question. I've enjoyed a lot of games, to be fair. Definitely the ones with the crowd there. We can write off any game where there wasn't a crowd. So by process of elimination.
The cup final gets ruled out there then.
The Papa
winning
John's
a cup.
Final. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it genuinely does.
Yeah,
because
I know what you mean, yeah.
It was a bit surreal, the cup final, if I'm honest with you. It was like a conveyor belt wedding.
Did it feel like an 11v11 shape?
At one of the best stadiums in the world.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, but then you got shipped out after half hour after the game. It was weird. So yeah, look, I think one of the ones I enjoyed, like halves wise, was the first half against Lincoln in the semi. We only had 10,000 there, but the noise they made could have been 50,000. So I enjoyed that, but obviously the day ended in heartache. I really enjoyed the first game of the season against Wigan. Because I thought that, like, you know, the football we played, the sort of brand, the fact that we turned the game around, the fact that expectations were quite low at that point, you know, we actually showed what we was about. And I think that sort of set the tone for our footballing ability and showed people what we were about. And then I've enjoyed the 2-5-0 home wins a lot because, like, when I look back on the game, I'm a bit warped in terms of, like, as a coach, but all I'm trying to find is those details that we've worked on and that they've executed, the lads. And when they do, it's amazing to see. Like, that's the bit that really sort of gets me out of bed in the morning. It's that, like, philosophy coming out in the game, like, terrorising the opposition. Do you know what I mean? The individual players bringing out their best in that particular moment to then go and create a match-winning opportunity or a goal or something like that. So that's the bit I'm obsessed about. How can we force more scenarios, more situations like that? So any game that we've done that is potentially my favourite game. So, like I say, the Morecambe game, the Cheltenham game, where we was outstanding over the top and terrorised them in that way.
I think sometimes as well, the ones that are pleasing from a player's point of view, perhaps I go to the Cambridge game where we've got the lead first half, we played okay, we played some good football in that first half, and then in the second half you come out, you know what's coming with the wind coming towards the goal. I think they had 11 or 12 corners, didn't they, Frankie? And it's one of those where you dig in, don't you? You grind it out, and as the centre half's coming off there, they've done their jobs winning those balls coming into the box. They're the pleasing ones as well, aren't they, away from home?
Yeah, pure character games those, aren't they? And like the fans that were there, they would have... Like, that was horrendous. That day was like, yeah, if you were watching it on the telly, nothing could...
We were watching it on the telly in the studio back here. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah, but like goalkeepers are taking a goal kick and spinning back into the 18-yard box. You know what I mean? Like the wind driving in your face, it's freezing cold. You know, so to get those wins, when, let's be honest, like you're expected to. And that's like League One and English football can be a real leveller. Right, that's not disrespecting Cambridge on that individual occasion, because I think Cambridge are a good side. But I also believe we've got really good players, right, and that we we can outplay a team like that if we play to our best. But in a scenario where the wind's coming in at, I think, 65 mile an hour gusts, yep. like that is tricky because, you know, it actually null and voids any footballing ability, and it becomes about character, about winning tackles, about being in the right position, about like dealing with the environment. And for me, that was one of our biggest wins as well, because it was another example of young players coming through, not only in extreme pressure, but in extreme conditions, where clearly we'd failed to do that in a game like Portsmouth away. Yeah. So another learning game.
Yeah, good. The last one we've got here now is someone is asking, how do you relax away from football? I get the impression you don't really relax away and you're 24/7 thinking about the game. Is that right?
Yeah, I think the challenge is to find those moments. It's really difficult. I live up here with Macca and Jevo, so we live in the same house, and 11 o'clock at night, we're looking at those type set plays and things like that and trying to find ways of killing the next opposition. Personally, I can switch off if I watch something, like sometimes. I'm a good sleeper, so that's a part of switching off, I suppose, sleeping well. And then, like, I need to find time, as all of us do, really, for that sort of like mindfulness and being healthy, you know. So whether that be go for a run or go to the gym, something that I've got a little bit better at lately. But I think that's more because I believe the club's now sort of on the right path, if you know what I mean. I think before it was like there wasn't enough hours in the day to improve protocol, to find solutions, to recruit, to do everything, work out training, to work out communication. But now I think there's more time to be able to think. And then what happens is, like, I give you an example, went on a 10K walk the other day on a day off, and all I'm thinking about is the changes. What are the tactical scenarios in the game? Like, who can I bring on? What will be the shape changes? What might their shape changes be? How can I affect the opposition's back line? Do you know what I mean? If we need to hold a lead, what are the changes we're going to make? So you start to think about those things. But if you can do that in a different environment than the football ground, then that is actually quite relaxing.
Yeah, and good for you as well. Good for your mental health as well, I'd imagine, as well, Lee. With that in mind, though, you've had no fixture during the week. Does that mean you've had extra time to think about these things for the next fixture, which will be Ipswich by the time this comes out? And have you had a chance, or will you be trying anything new with the lads at the training ground, or is it just, you know, as you were?
No, I think we always try and find little quirky sort of moments. You know, I think the table tennis game came out the other day where the lovely Linda taught Dan Neil a little lesson, which was good fun because, like I say, that's all part of, I think, driving a really good culture around the football club. You know, that's a, like, when we win, it must be as a collective. Like, the fans have to take credit. Do you know what I mean? The academy staff have to take credit. The striker who scores the winner needs to take credit. Do you know what I mean? But not more than Linda. Do you know what I mean? And that becomes really, really important, I think, to us. And if we can get that right, it can be really, really powerful. But yeah, we're always doing little quirky little things to try and raise the mood, keep the mood high. Do you know what I mean? They're all big kids, you know what they're like. It's like Peter Pan, you know. Aidan McGeady's 35. All he wants to do is act like he's 18 when he's in around the football club. So that's what you've got to try and promote, try and encourage, and also know the time, of course, to be serious.
And of course, you know, you talked about the spirit there, and you're coming together as a club as one. There, you mentioned everyone from the cleaners to the guys up front playing in the starting 11. But as a community as well, we've seen in the last week or so the community coming together. There's a couple of initiatives at the moment, fan-led one with the soup kitchen where you went down to visit, and there's also the club and foundation doing the 5 for 5 campaign as well. It's particularly poignant around this time of year as well, Lee, but it really does show what kind of people, not just living in the northeast and Sunderland, but Sunderland fans around the world, what kind of people they are, doesn't it? It really shows them a good light.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a really interesting part of the world as well, because of the history, you know, the history of the people. The historian, we asked to come up and deliver to the players in the summer. And we didn't want to know about the football club. We wanted to know about the people. And I think that's the key. You know, what was your granddad's job? What was your great granddad's job? You know what I mean? What was the weekend look like for you and your dad? Do you know what I mean? It's that type of stuff that we were interested in, because we want our performance to reflect the fan's personality. And I want the team to reflect my personality. And I think that also extends then into the community, because let's be honest, the community is the football club. You know, like look at Bury that have gone out of business, like shambles for going out because of all the people affected in the community. I'm sure Bury can live without football, but can they live without all the good that the football club did surrounding the football club? Do you know what I mean? And the education, the care, the community projects, the charity, do you know what I mean? The opportunities that club provided. And that's why that club going out of business is a massive travesty. So we've got to understand that really the football club is the hub, I think, of the community, particularly this community. And I think that we have to play our part in that. I think the players have to play their part in that as role models. But even more importantly, just as good people. It's as simple as that, because there's so many good causes, good people that work in around the football club in conjunction with the football club, whether that be sponsors, whether that be community projects. And we have to be out and about. And actually, that's the one regret I've got since I've been here, and it's circumstantial because of COVID, that we haven't been able to mix anywhere near as much as we could or should down to the pandemic. And that's been disappointing, because we haven't quite had the vibe that maybe you would get outside the pandemic, with that sort of inspiration that the players can give to like the particularly the kids in and around the area.
That's good. Yeah,
yeah. Lee, thanks for your time this afternoon. I guess all that's left for you to do is to give a Christmas message, if you wouldn't mind, to the fans listening to this in and around the community and around the world, of course, if you wouldn't mind. You are the queen.
Absolutely.
And it's 3 p.m. Here we go.
No, listen, from everybody at Sunderland, AFC, we wish everybody an amazing Christmas. You know, make sure everybody stays healthy, but enjoys their family and friends. And let's have a really successful festive period on and off the pitch, crack on to 2022, and go and achieve all our aims and goals, both in football and in life.
Lee, thank you very much indeed.
Yep, thanks, Lee, and all the best at the weekend down at Ipswich.
Cheers, guys. Thank you very much. Thanks. Have a good Christmas to you too, guys. Cheers.
Lee Johnson, first team coach of Sunderland Football Club, speaking to us here on SAFC Unfiltered. And you know, he always speaks well to us, doesn't he? He always is very honest to us here on SAFC Unfiltered, and he gives us a bit of an insight as well as to, you know, the morale and the confidence in and around the squad at the moment.
Yeah, he does. And as you say, we've had him on before, haven't we? And he does, and he's come on there again, and he's quite open. We've obviously touched on a month or so ago when things weren't going quite well, and how the atmosphere was in and around the training ground, and how they've managed to get back on track in the last few weeks. And just the type of character he is. I think, you know, I mentioned it there, he lives and breathes football, and that's, you know, that's what you want from your manager, I think, really.
Interesting, he said that he lives with Jimmy Mack and Phil Jevons. I mean, what they're having for tea, that lot?
It's not that. Well, Mack has got the tactics board out doing the set plays, I think,
in
isn't
the dressing
he, for desserts,
guards.
I think, yeah. But no, I enjoyed it. And hopefully we're successful this season. We're in a good spot this moment in time, coming up to the halfway point in the season. Still a lot of hard work to go. Interesting to see what happens in January in terms of, as we said, incomings, and outgoings. But yeah, a lot of football to be played. We're in a good position. And let's see how it goes.
He sounded pretty optimistic about some of those injuries returning soon, didn't he?
Yeah, certainly at left back, I think, you know, with Denver Hume and Dennis Sirkin, hopefully he gets one of those back. Obviously at right back, I think Niall Huggins is out for longer than what they thought. So I'd imagine they'll be looking at trying to get a right back in January. You know, because we've mentioned there Carl Winchester, yeah, he's done a job at right back, but we've seen what he can bring in the middle of the park as well, because you've got Corey Evans out and you've got Luke O'Neill out. So we're short in numbers in certain areas. So as we said there, you know, Christian Speakman, Lee Johnson, the directors will all be looking at what they can do in January and know that the position we're in as well. If we can get three or four bodies into the building and hopefully one or two out of the treatment room, then we're in a good position to attack this second half of the season.
Yeah, and you know, all things considered, I can't imagine we're going to be doing another pod before the end of the year, Danny, with the games coming thick and fast as well, and the fact that we're not allowed up the academy anymore because of COVID. But we've seen pretty much everyone in the league now. What do you make of the first half of the season?
Yeah, I'll still stand by. I don't think when we're at it, when we're on our game, as we've seen, you know, Saturday for me, first 45 minutes, if we're playing to somewhere in and around those levels, you know, most of your players are having a 7, 8, 9 out of 10, then we're more than a match for anybody in this league. When we dip, as we've seen at Rotherham, for instance.
Is that one of the teams you saw this season and thought, you know, they could be definitely there and thereabouts even though winning the league?
No, even though we lost there, I don't think they played us off the park. You know, they scored goals. Balls came in the box and they scored goals. And then I can't judge what of them throughout the season so far, what 20 plus games on that 90 minutes. You understand, obviously, we watch us week in, week out. But there's nothing. I look at any of the other teams and we fear, you know, we're at League One level. We are expected to be up there competing for promotion. And that's where we are at this moment in time. We've had a blip. We had that 3-4 game spell where we came off it. It wasn't good enough. The lads will know that. And obviously Lee Johnson knows that as well. But now he's got to try and get them back firing. And I think since that second half in the Oxford game, we've seen what the boys are capable of. We know we can play through teams. Dan Neil on the ball. We've seen Winchester in there. You know, Broadhead's up ahead of speed now, Pritchard. So we've got the players that can cause the opposition problems at this level. And let's hope that this continues. As we've seen in the last couple of home games, we go to Ipswich at the weekend on the road. We've got to turn in another performance and come back with the result.
Yeah, big game against Ipswich. It's funny, isn't it, how the fixtures turn around so fast, doesn't it?
Played them a couple of weeks ago and then there they are again. Yeah, we haven't, Doncaster's coming up. We haven't played Doncaster yet, or Lincoln, the only two sides we haven't played yet. But no, it is a bit of a cliche. I asked him there, do you break games down into blocks of fives or sixes as some managers do? But it's a cliche saying, but you've got to concentrate on that next game. He mentioned there that the lads have got an eye on the Arsenal game. And yeah, of course, you can see that going down there, lovely stadium surface, etc. But the next game's the most important one for us. Don't undo that good work we've done in the last couple of home games by going down to Ipswich and coming up short.
Right then, thanks Danny for your time this afternoon. I don't know when we're going to be back here on SAFC Unfiltered, but it's always best to subscribe on the platform of which you are enjoying this podcast on right now. Have a good Christmas. We'll see you on the commentary soon.
Yeah, and a happy Christmas from myself as well. Have a good one.